Hello?
Chris?
Yes.
Chris, I said they play better with Foles.
Yeah, I'm saying, the question I was asking was, do you think that Wentz can't rush himself back because they did win with Foles? That the Eagles, you know.
Oh, I do. I think Wentz literally saw, the parade dancing by, and the only thing he got was to hold the trophy, kiss it, and have confetti in his hair. You're dealing with someone who's always been the star of his high school team.
Yeah.
Always been the star of his college team. Came up here to this level, was expected to be the star, wanted to be the star. There's no schism on this team. There's no we're in Foles' camp, we're in Wentz's camp. There is a feeling, though, that, you know what, we're more confident and we're more comfortable with one guy than we are with the other.
And okay. And that's the key, Joe. You're absolutely 110% right. The team as a whole operates better when Foles is there. It is something that you have to watch. It's a calmness. They're not rushing. They're not making stupid mistakes. There's a big difference when he's back there. Carson, and if you notice, you know, Carson on the sidelines, you can look at him. Yeah, he's happy that they're winning, but he wishes he was out there. You can see that. And that's the competitiveness of it. Next year, if let's just suppose they get lightning in the bottle, and even if they lose to the Saints, you still have a quarterback controversy because this team operates better with the second string guy who is older, but the young guy is the future. What do you do?
And that was going to be my question for you, Joe, and for both of you guys, really. What do you do? I mean, you know, Nick Foles, at his press conferences, has basically been saying, hey, look, I'm going to enjoy this ride when I can, as if he's in anticipation of the fact that he's not going to be here next year. That's been my sense. You know, I was down in Washington with him, and when I hear, well, I listen to him in the press conference, he's like, hey, I'm going to enjoy the ride, as if to say, I don't know how this is going to end. So, Joe, how should this end? How do you think it's going to end?
This is interesting, Chris. I think I told you about what happened after the Texans game.
I think you did, but go on. I'm going to refresh my memory.
Nick, you know, it's after the game, and Nick's there, and he's still in his locker room. He had his shoulder pads and helmet off. He still had his game pants pads on. And you know how they do. You have, quote-unquote, your podium players, your Foles, your Wentzes, Coach Peterson. So you have the Eagles PR people surrounding Foles' locker. And I come up and they say, you know, Joe, he's going to answer questions on the podium. I said, I wasn't going to ask him anything. I just wanted to congratulate him. And I thought he did really well. And one of the guys says, well, you know, after he gets off, you could certainly shake his hand. And Nicky turns around and goes, yo, thank you. And he turns around and pulls me in. And his freaking hand, well, I'm a munchkin to begin with, you both know. His freaking hand came halfway up my forehead.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my.
Right.
He's shaking my hand, and he's pulling me in, and he says, you thought I was dead, didn't you? And I said, well, yeah, you kind of rose like Lazarus there. He says, I just got the wind knocked out of me. And he's engaging me, and I'm looking like sideways at the PR guys, like I'm trying to get away, you know, in a sense. But, like, he literally and figuratively pulled me in. Oh. How often does that happen with guys? How often does that happen with players? I think that says a lot about Foles.
Right.
First, I think it says a lot about Foles as a player. And it also says, you know what? Even like a little freaking, you know, pocket-lit peon like me, you know, he's going to give the time of day.
Right.
And I'm going to enjoy this ride. I'm not going to ignore anyone. I'm not going to big-time anyone. I'm going to make sure every second, every priceless second,
right,
every millisecond of this is going to be, you know, if someone wants to come up and say thank you, I'm going to show my gratitude. And that says, I mean, obviously the writing's on the wall. They're going to go with Wentz. I have no issue with them going with Wentz. Wentz needs a lot of growing up to do.
Right.
And I think he's very capable of doing it. I think he needs to take a step back and take a whole look at his complete picture. Quite frankly, this is kind of odd about Carson Wentz because I think he's a character person. I didn't say he wasn't. but I also think there's a tinge of selfishness there to him. Mm-hmm. And I also think there's a bit, not a whole lot, but I think there's a bit of diva to him. Mm-hmm. And I think he needs to take that step back and certainly take a number of pages out of the book of Nick Foles. I know they both like each other. I know they both appreciate each other. There is a genuine kindness between the two of them. And the other thing, too, is let's also be realistic between the three of us here. Who could dislike Nick Foles?
No.
On or off the field?
No, I mean you can't dislike the guy. I mean, and I think he's grounded in a sense that, and I attribute that some of that to his, you know, his spirituality, but he's grounded in a sense that I think out of all the players that I've seen, along with Malcolm Jenkins, is that, you know, you realize that your lifespan in this game is short lived, you know, and you gotta enjoy every moment you can while you got it here. I mean, and that's the sense I get out of Nick Foles.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. I think what's going to happen is they're going to move forward with Wentz, as they should. Hopefully we're going to get Carson 2017 and not Carson 2018. But let me ask you guys this.
Okay.
Two questions. One, do you think the Eagles win the Super Bowl last year with Wentz? Two, do you think the Eagles win games like they won last week against the Bears with Wentz?
I'm going to say this. Here's a limb. If you're talking pre ACL injury, Carson Wentz,
If Carson Wentz doesn't get hurt last year, do they win the Super Bowl with Carson Wentz?
I think they do. I honestly think that they do because of his mobility. I think in the two playoff game, the playoff game against Atlanta, I think they blow Atlanta off the field, and I think they also beat the Vikings, and I think they beat New England. I think that they beat New England because last year, the Eagles had a running game, and they were a little bit more complete, and it allowed Wentz to kind of see everybody. And Wentz was not in that mode of, I've got to prove myself. And it's a natural thing. I mean, quarterbacks if you don't have an ego as a quarterback, something wrong with you. But it's a natural thing for him to want to get back to rush. I don't think you do that at the expense of your teammates, so to speak. But I do think that, you know, pre-ACL, I mean, the way that he was riding, the role that he was on, and given the fact that you had the Indianapolis, good Lord, you had... why am I thinking the guy went to Maryland? Frank Reich coaching on as a quarterback coach, and you had all these guys around him. I think he makes that run to the Super Bowl before the injury because he was playing at that high level. Okay, So I do think that, and I think, like I say again, if he does not get hurt and he's in that mode this year. You know, and he's not playing with that, oh, wow, you know, Nick won over me. I think he wins. I think with that offense and his mobility, they handle Chicago a lot better.
Okay. How about it, Darrell?
You know, Carson Wentz, we've seen him from his rookie year. He's now in his third year. And the thing that bothers me most is that he's still making the same mistakes that he made as a rookie. No one writes about that.
Daryl, I spoke to two NFL people.
Mm-hmm.
One very prominent.
Mm-hmm.
They say he's regressed.
They say he has progress.
Regress.
Oh yeah, there's no question about it, Joe. And not much has been made about it because there's been other things that have clouded this whole situation. The Eagles are so fortunate to have Nick Foles as their backup. When you have their chances of winning are much better with him than with Nate Sudfeld. Okay.
Yeah. You think?
Yeah. And not much, you know, Carson has had a pretty free pass. And I think that's going to change next year. Next season, because I think a lot of people are looking past him. You know, they say, hey, this team plays better as a whole when number 9 is back there as opposed to number 11. Well, maybe number 11, he has all the potential and he's younger and what have you, but maybe we need to sit him down. I don't think that Nick Foles got off to a bad start because you didn't know about the Carson thing and that kept being on his head. When are you going to take a seat to Carson? And that played a big factor in the Eagles getting a slow start this year. No one's saying anything about that either. This is a very critical moment because you don't want to hurt Carson's feelings, but you got to be fair to Nick Foles. So they have a quarterback controversy, but right now that doesn't mean anything. What matters is whether or not Nick Foles can win tomorrow night.
I'm going to say this. If Nick Foles takes them to a Super Bowl, another Super Bowl, there will be a lot more intensity on Carson Wentz after he leaves, because I don't think Nick is coming back. And I think that Wentz can react to that in two ways. He can fold under that pressure, or he could go back and really work with his assistants, work on his game, work on maybe seeing the field a lot better than he did this year. Although he's had some statistically before he got hurt, he was having statistically a better year than he was having last year. I mean, that's the other argument there. Joe, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, but also we saw a lot of things, and the eye test is enough for me, and the eye test is enough for me. A lot of football,
right?
You know, the idea for all of us that we saw a different version of Wentz. We saw a Carson Wentz who tried to force things. We saw a Carson Wentz that did not have the mobility that he had the previous year. And again, we saw a Carson Wentz that again was about 75 to 80% of what he actually is. What makes Carson Wentz Carson Wentz? And consequently, because of that, he limited his vision. He limited his scope of the field. Seeing almost exclusively 86.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And compounding that is that limited mobility and his limited field vision created a limited attack, which in my opinion, my very strong opinion, led to this back fracture that he currently has. I mean, he needed to tune, he needed to slow his jets.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Calm down and take it easy. He did not. He is the reason why he's in the situation that he's in. He only has himself to blame, even though we'll see if he's willing to turn around and take that blame. Now, if Foles pulls this off, and I'm thinking in the back of my mind, he's capable. We certainly know he's capable of doing it.
Right.
If Foles pulls this off, the Eagles will have an incredible dilemma because here's the Eagles' deal. Wentz, because again, we're going to start working in. The Eagles are going to be walking in that eggshell phase. They're going to be walking on the delicate eggshells of Carson Wentz's ego. He is in his last year of his rookie deal. You're dealing with Foles. That if they want to turn around and say, hey, Nick, here's $20 million, because they certainly threw, I think they threw $9 or $11 million at him, which basically was just a bonus to say, and Jeffrey Lurie, in all utmost class, Jeffrey Lurie saying, you won us a Super Bowl, bang, young man, here's your reward for doing so. Here's your reward for doing so. Highest paid backup quarterback in the league. I think it's $9 to $11 million. And he's making $1 million per game now. So he's going to do really, really well for himself, as he deserves to. You're a winning quarterback. You win in this league. What happens when you win and perform? You deserve to get paid. You deserve, you deserve the highest accolades. You deserve the rewards.
Well,
so you're dealing with a situation here where hopefully Foles falls to something impossible, which in my opinion would be impossible. Run the table again, get the big trophy again, get the reward, and then you know what? We have the best of both worlds. We have two very, very good quarterbacks, and you know something? I'd rather have two than one. And if poor Carson's going to want to cry in the corner over what the situation is, I'd rather have two Vince Lombardi trophies in the NovaCare Center than one.
Well, I got to say this, though. And this is another thing I don't think anybody's taking a look at. You know, if Foles does run the table, there's going to be a lot more scrutiny because, as you said, this is the end of his rookie contract, right? There's going to be a lot more scrutiny to his injuries and physical health. I mean, how much money are they going to really pay Carson Wentz, given his injury history, not only in the National Football League? When he was at North Dakota State, he was out a lot. And I remember watching him a little bit at North Dakota State and he was hurt half the time. And so that, I mean, that's going to really, you know, that's going to get the Eagles, I think, brass into thinking, geez, how much do we really want to expend on a guy? He has tremendous upside, but he does have a curious history of injuries.
Well, Chris, and on that same note, we already have a quarterback controversy. And people aren't saying it, but really, you're watching this team perform at peak efficiency with number nine as your quarterback. Now, I'm not saying that Carson Wentz isn't healthy enough to play. I'm not a doctor or anything like that. But you're seeing what this team is capable of doing. Okay, you can't tell me you're not scratching your head wondering, well, wait a minute. Maybe this guy might be our quarterback. He doesn't have to be the prettiest car, but he wins.
That's true.
So, I mean, you got to look at it. Carson, does he have an upside? He has an upside that's phenomenal. But they don't
operate. Upside with an asterisk.
But they don't operate well when he's back there.
Right.
You can't tell me that with the game on the line in the fourth quarter with 5 minutes left and you down six, that he can get it for you. I think he's only done it once. Well, with Nick, if you notice, they move. They make things happen. So you can't tell me Jeffrey Lurie isn't watching this. You can't tell me Doug Peterson hasn't watched this. You can't tell me Deuce Staley hasn't watched this. You know, so they have a lot to think about. But right now, the most important thing is beating the New Orleans Saints. And if he beats the New Orleans Saints, trust me, you're going to hear people saying, hey, maybe this guy might be the guy we need.
So, Joe, let me ask you a question then. For the Eagles to win this game tomorrow, what has to happen? Give me a scenario in which the Eagles pull this victory off tomorrow. I think they can do it, but I think that line's got to get in Breeze's face. They've got to.
Low-scoring game favors the Eagles. Patience on offense. A commitment to the running game, even if it's not working at times. We saw that last week against the Bears. At times, obviously it was stuffed, but at least the Bears had to honor the run. Mm-hmm. Defensively, it's very, very simple. A push up the middle in Drew Brees' face. Get him off his spots. That was a huge thing this whole week. You get him off his spots, and if you find you use the template that the Dallas Cowboys had, again, getting Brees off his spots, that push up the middle. Now, I believe the Saints have a few banged-up offensive linemen. That was an offensive line that was healthy the last time the Eagles and Saints played. So this is going to be very crucial to get, again, patience on offense and commitment to the running game. And third, a push up the middle. I think if you get those three things working, you're capable of beating the New Orleans Saints. And if they beat the Saints, the one team out of the four teams left, the one team that obviously I think we all fear are the Saints, and certainly the Saints at home. They are 5-0. They've never lost a divisional round playoff game in New Orleans. The Sean Payton Drew Brees combination has not lost at this level in New Orleans. And this team, if the team's going to break that streak, it's this version of the Philadelphia Eagles, which in my opinion, again, and I'd like to get both of your inputs on this, is this the closest we've seen to the Eagles Super Bowl team? This version of the Eagles that we've seen the last 4 weeks?
The way they've been playing, I would venture to say yes. And especially the way in which Foles has distributed the football. And even when they've run the football, one of the things I've noticed is that, you know, like last week, Wendell Smallwood is getting a lot better. And and the thing is, who else is getting better? They're starting to kind of gradually get Darren Sproles back into the offense. I don't know what's the deal with Josh Adams at this point, but they run a little bit better when they decide to run. So, Darryl, I'm gonna let you jump in here. We got to go to break. We got to go to Darryl. Let me get your response, and then we'll close out the segment.
Well, they're going to let all those guys in. Josh Adams He's a good runner between the tackles. He's not a good runner running outside. They're doing a, Smallwood came in and he was just effective.
Yeah.
Sprouls came in. They have a running back by committee, and who's up, whoever is hot, they're going to get the touches.
Okay. Well, first of all, Joe, I got to say, man, thank you so much for, as always, being here. Well, of course, when we get down to boxing, we're going to definitely bring you back.
I'm going to give you some news.
Give me some news.
All right.
I believe, strongly believe, Tevin Farmer, our man Tevin Farmer, IBF junior lightweight champion from Philly, is going to be fighting in Philly Friday, March 15th.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, title fight in the Philly. We'll cover it. I don't think anybody else in the media will cover it because they don't think boxing exists.
Where, is it going to be in Atlantic City or is it going to be here locally?
No, you said it's going to be here, right?
Yeah. It'll be in Philly. Yeah.
What venue have you heard? Or
don't know yet. Either the Met, which is just opening up, and I'm excited about that. By the way, that's going to.
I just saw John Oliver at the Met. That's a cool venue.
Well, you know something, Joe, that's great.
More than the Accord Center.
I don't know about that. I don't know if the Met, the floor plan of the Met, and I've never been there, but my people have been there. I don't know if that's the correct venue for it, but I'm glad that it's going to be in Philly. That's the most important thing. It's going to be here.
Okay. Well, gentlemen, thank you for Joe. Thank you for being on this segment. We've got to go to break, and you're listening to 96.1 FM, 900 AM, WURD, Black Talk Media. The Chris Murray Report will be right back.
Enterprise Exterminators will evaluate and eliminate whatever pest problems you may have, specializing in bed bugs, fleas, mice, and roaches. Do-it-yourself kits available. Hurry down to 4943 Wayne Avenue now. 215-849-7070.
1 in 3 adults in America have pre-diabetes, but most don't know it. To let people know it can be reversed before it becomes type 2 diabetes, professional basketball player Julius Randle is doing everything in reverse.
I'm only dunking with reverse windmills. I drove the whole way to practice in reverse. I don't recommend it. This move's called the reverse shuffle. I do recommend it. And it took me months to learn how to speak in reverse, like this. Here's 10 almost for diabetes type 2 with living Benhas Mamai. In other words, my mom has been living with type 2 diabetes for almost 10 years. So together, we want to say to the 84 million Americans at risk, exercise and healthy eating can help reverse prediabetes. Start by taking a simple one-minute risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
Betty can't say that in reverse.
You're listening to Word Radio, 96.1 FM and 900 AM WURD, independent black media.
The word is about, there's something evolving. Whatever may come, the world keeps revolving. They say the next big thing is here, that the revolution's near. But to me it seems quite clear that it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
You know, history repeating is something that the Eagles want to have here, is history repeating itself. But there is a city, there's the Crescent City along the banks of the Mississippi in New Orleans, and it is my great pleasure to have my longtime friend in this profession, and, you know, sports writer extraordinaire, Freddie Willis. Freddie, what's the atmosphere like in New Orleans amongst the fans? What's everybody, I mean, you know, is everybody confident this is going to be a Super Bowl run down in New Orleans? And first of all, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Chris. How you doing, man?
I'm doing okay, man. I'm just, this is my favorite time of the year. It's January. It's playoff time.
Yes, sir. Well, you know how it is down here in the Crescent City. You know, everything is at a fever pitch right now. you know, especially with the Saints about to embark on possibly another playoff run, another Super Bowl run possibly, and there's a lot of excitement here. It's been a long time since the Saints have had a playoff game here.
Wow.
In New Orleans. So, I would think that the excitement and the level of excitement is probably 10 times what it was back in 2009. So, you know, when they made that when they made the run to the Super Bowl, winning the Super Bowl back then. But there's a lot of excitement down here, no question about it. It's just we have to wait until tomorrow afternoon to finally play a playoff game. So
right,
but the excitement is real, man. It's really good down here.
Are they? Do you get a sense? I guess Washington. I guess you know. I don't know how closely you follow. You know the team down there. But do you get a sense that they're not looking past Philadelphia this time? Are they well aware of the fact that the Eagles might be coming in here with a little bit of a chip on their shoulder? I mean, you lose 48-7 like that. You know, are they expecting the Eagles to come in and just, you know, and be a little bit? I mean, they're not looking past Philly, are they?
Oh no, Sean Payton made mention of that this week when he was talking to the media. This is certainly a much different Philadelphia team than the one they saw just 6 weeks ago. And I think he's putting the team on notice here that they, you know, they have to be aware that Philly is going to really come in here and especially kind of make a statement, you know, if, you know, after their last meeting. I mean, Malcolm Jenkins, former Saints corner and now playing safety for Philly, you know, he said that they were embarrassed by their performance the last time. So, I think him especially, he's gonna have some extra motivation coming in here, playing against the Saints. So, I gotta think the Saints are really gonna be geared up for this, and they're really focused on just Philadelphia right now.
Right.
You know, all of this talk about Super Bowl and everything, Saints have the advantage and all that stuff. They got to play the game,
right?
You know, it's not going to be that simple. And you know, I know the Superdome is going to be rocking and everything like that, but I've been to playoff games in the Superdome way back in the '90s,
uh-huh.
and I remember especially the playoff game the Eagles beat the Saints 36-20 when Eric Allen kicked off Bobby Aber, I think, three times.
Right, and Randall Cunningham was in that game. It was 92, 93. Yes. Right.
So, and I'm just noticing, and I noticed from the three of the four playoff games last week, except for the Texans game, all three of those games were decided by less than a score.
Right.
So it's another level. When it comes down to the playoffs, and I really think this is going to come down to who has control, you know, controls the ball and the time, and if one team can steal a possession from another team, I think it's going to really come down to that.
Yeah, I get the feeling when you look at these playoffs, you get a sense that this is wide open. I don't see. In all due respect to the Saints, I don't see a team that's really dominant in these playoffs. I mean, the Saints are good, but, you know, the Saints have had their moments. I think Kansas City is good because they can, you know, they can throw the ball downfield, but defensively they're terrible. And the thing is, what we know of Andy Reid up here is that Andy Reid sometimes in playoff games wasn't necessarily the best coach in a playoff game. Because I remember a few years ago, maybe 5 years ago, they were up on the Colts big in a playoff game, and they ended up losing something like 44-40 or something like that. And that's when they had Alex Smith. So I just get this sense. I just get this sense that I would not be surprised if the number one seeds in both conferences either lost the game or had a tough game. And so, I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I really think that the Saints have some kind of vulnerability. And I feel that if they're going to make a Super Bowl run this year, the defense is going to have to take them there.
Right.
Because you look at what the Saints did the first 11 games of the season, they averaged, nearly 37 a game.
Right.
Now, they kind of were vulnerable in the last five games. And especially in the game against Carolina, that they won 12-9. The defense had to, there's going to be some games in the playoffs that the defense is going to have to shine. And, you may see some 17-13 or 12-9 games in the playoffs, but the defense is going to have to take them there, because there's no guarantee that, now if the Saints have all of their guys at full strength and are doing great things on offense, then sure, there's always that possibility they could have a 30, 35, 40 point game. That's been a concern. That's been a key, because the offensive line has been really nicked up at least the last part of the season. So it's going to be interesting. I believe in my team, of course.
Uh-huh.
But, you got to play the games.
Right. One final thing before I let you go. Have you all run into Eagles fans? Because, Eagles fans are a little bit out there and everything. And so, have you all confronted Eagles fans down the French Quarter?
Not yet, but there are some that are here.
Okay.
I got a feeling that we're gonna run into some folks later on this evening. Into tomorrow, but there's few here, but they're coming.
Okay. Well, Freddie, I, as always, man, I've always admired you. As what are you doing these days?
Well, right now I'm working as a freelance writer for Regal Magazine. It's an African American men's magazine.
Okay,
I do that. Do sports for them out of Houston, Texas.
Okay. All right. Well, I tell you what. Do me a favor. On Facebook, inbox me your information. I'd love to get your insights, especially on the NBA and some other things. But I'd love to get you on to get you to talking about this. And thank you for just calling in today. I appreciate you, man.
You bet, Chris. Anytime, man.
All right. Thank you. That's my man, Freddie Willis. Okay. Now. I'm waiting. We're waiting for Shalice Mansi-Young. I'm gonna send her a text for her to call us in. She's with Yahoo Shutdown Corner, and I want to see if I can text her to get her on the air with us. But we were talking. I wanted to talk a little bit with you, Daryl, about the black coaches situation. We were talking about the fact. We're talking off the break or during the break about whether or not we're talking about whether the whole situation with black coaches, whether or not are they in the pipeline. I mean, it seems like the Rooney Rule. Coaches are going to talk to me. I mean, not coaches, but general managers and owners are going to bring in the guys that they're going to bring in. And right now, according to some people, is it racism or is it a little bit of? Because my thing is, I still think that a lot of African American coaches, they get when they struggle during a season like Steve Wilkes, they are quick to get the hook. And a lot of them aren't necessarily in the current pipeline of hot assistant coaches. Everybody's looking for the next Sean McVay. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, there's only one Sean McVay.
Right.
So, everyone, the NFL is a copycat league. And what works well for the Philadelphia Eagles, they may try in Washington, D.C. They may try in Dallas, Texas. There's so many facets when you go about choosing a head coach. Unfortunately, people aren't choosing a head coach, well, okay, he's an African American. That has a bearing to some. LeBron James called it a slave mentality that permeates in the NFL, and he may be right.
Mm-hmm.
There are no people of color in ownership.
No.
That needs to change.
Right. I would say that's a part of it too. And to me, it always goes back to the whole, you know, our owners, you know, even in this day and age, you would think they would be comfortable with having an African American or some, and I get the impression that they're not comfortable with having an African American coach as a face, because the coach and the quarterback.
Well, the organization.
Yeah, they're the face of the organization. And I'll even venture to say there's been a grudging acceptance of the Cam Newtons and the Russell Wilsons and the Deshaun Watsons, of course, as long as they win.
Mm-hmm.
But I still say that there is this sort of grudging acceptance of those of a black face, you know, as the head of the franchise. I mean, I would even venture to say that even here, I mean, I think that within the organization, people love Donovan McNabb, but there was always this sort of within the community here, people hated him or people loved him. And but at the same time, I look at it from a coaching perspective. Black coaches are always quick, with the exception of Marvin Lewis in Cincinnati, but perhaps he should have gotten a hook. And they're often quick to pull the plug if it does, like Steve Wilks. How do you fire a guy after 1 year, after he got a new quarterback and all that? So maybe the organization wasn't as comfortable, and that seems to be a huge dilemma.
Well, in that sense, they also weren't forthcoming into why that happened. So there's so many things, you know, when you're looking for a head coach, what do you look for? You look for a guy who's a winner. Okay, you're looking for a guy who is young. You're looking for someone who can make a difference in the game and elevate your team to its elite status. There aren't many guys out there that have done that. The African-American coaches who have been considered or who were head coaches, in some cases, like Steve Wilks, they didn't get an opportunity. In the case of Todd Bowles in New York, you had a good quarterback, but that's just one of 11 people who were awful.
Yeah.
So, you know, you got, if you're going to give an African-American coach a hand, give him a team. Give him something to work with. Give him a New England Patriots. Give him San Diego Chargers. Well, the San Diego Chargers do have an African-American coach. But you know what I'm saying.
Anthony Lynn, you know, I voted for Anthony Lynn because I'm a member of the Pro Football Writers as my coach of the year before. Because look what he did in L.A. I mean, he put that team to the playoffs and probably should have won a division except for a couple of games here and there. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, that's a guy, you know, but he had a chance to mold the team in his own image. But I remember Lovie Smith getting fired after a couple of years in Tampa Bay, and that's not enough time.
Lovie got the Marvin, okay, but then you look at Marvin Smith in Cincinnati.
Marvin Lewis.
Lewis, I'm sorry, yeah. Look at how long he lasted.
Right.
And he probably should have been fired long before.
Right, right. Let me check the phone. So from that standpoint, I mean, you know, I look at it like this, you know. I get upset at the fact that, you know, it's just like the quick hook is always there. It's always the quick hook. It's always, if they struggle after a year, it's the quick hook. It's like, you know, you're not given enough time to, it's almost as if, okay, we'll give you the opportunity, but if you make one false stumble, you know, that's it. Well, you can at least say we gave you a chance. Okay, we have Shalice Young. I want to get Shalice in on this. Shalice, we're talking about African-American coaches And we'll be talking about other things about the playoffs because I want to get your take on that. But what do you think is the issue with African-American coaches not getting the jobs or getting the quick hook from jobs if it doesn't work out almost initially?
I don't know what the hard and fast answer is, unfortunately, Chris. Obviously, this year in particular, it looks terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Because 5 of the 8 coaches that were fired are black men. It sounds like Brian Flores, the New England Patriots defensive coordinator, is going to get the Miami Dolphins job. So at least there will be one black hire among the 8.
Right.
But I think, unfortunately, the way that the league has gone for the last several years is that it's an offensive-driven league, and there just aren't that many black men who are in quarterback, coach, or offensive coordinator positions. You know, I don't know why that is, but that's the reality of it right now. Hopefully, things will change. But I don't know. You know, I think it's so multi-layered. I mean, because you have a man like Bruce Arians forever and always is invited to the cookout because Bruce Arians is the first coach to have all 3 of his coordinators be black men in Tampa Bay.
Right.
His offensive, defensive, and special teams coordinators are all black men that he is bringing with him. So, you know, yes, he's giving them jobs, but he's also helping them down the line. That if they prove themselves with the Buccaneers, then they're going to get chances. I think, unfortunately, that's part of it. We've seen this year that if you even have a passing relationship with Sean McVay, the Los Angeles Rams coach, then you're getting an interview.
Right.
And everybody's trying to find the next Sean McVay. But why is nobody trying to find the next Anthony Lynn? I mean, they started 0-3, 0-4 last year, the Chargers did.
Right.
And barely missed the playoffs last year and made the playoffs with, 11 wins this year. So why is nobody trying to find the next Anthony Lynn? I mean, I think that's question number one, but everybody is trying to, we got to find an offensive coach. We got to find an offensive coach when, you know, a leader is a leader.
Right.
So you need your head coach to be a leader of men. And it shouldn't necessarily matter which side of the ball he comes from if he's a good leader of men. I mean, Mike Vrabel, the head coach of the Titans, he was not a very good defensive coordinator last year with the Houston Texans, but it seems like he will be a very good head coach with the Titans because of the leadership qualities he brings and what he can do from a big picture perspective. So why does it matter if you coach quarterbacks or not? If you're a leader, you're a leader.
Right. I was going to say, man, that's a good point because I remember North Turner was a great offensive coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's a great offensive, but he couldn't every time he became a head coach, whether it was when it was the San Diego Chargers or in Washington, and I was kind of a witness to that being down there. I mean, he just was not a good leader of men. But I guess in this, because everybody wants the big offenses now. I mean, they saw what Sean McVay did with the Rams offense, although it wasn't that hard to improve a team under, you know, that played under Jeff Fisher because
right.
Jeff Fisher, and history has proven out that Jeff Fisher was terrible to quarterbacks, going to Steve McNair, Vince Young, you know, and even Jared Goff's development was stunted mm-hmm. under Jeff Fisher. So you're right. So how does this situation, I mean, because we talk about somebody in the pipeline, Eric Bieniemy in Kansas City, and that offense with Patrick Mahomes, is it just a question? And they're college guys, too. You know, Michael Locksley, who's going to be the head coach at the University of Maryland, you know, I thought did a phenomenal job in the development of Tua Tagovailoa. So does the NFL do they have to expand their reach in where they find guys?
I think they've tried. You know, I'm not huge on giving points for effort necessarily.
Right.
But they do have a coaching internship program. I believe it's the Bill Walsh internship program that is supposed to help. Now you have women in that program as well, but it's supposed to help, you know, former players and coaches of color in particular get internships. Well, those internships often are only for training camp.
Right.
So, you know, part of the problem, I think, is that these coaches who become head coaches, they have a history with certain guys. You know,
right.
I worked with you for 2 years at this place. I worked with you for 3 years at that place. When I become a head coach, I'm going to take you along with me. And, you know, we all sort of gravitate to the people that look like us, right or wrong. That's just, you know, human nature is we tend to gravitate toward the people who look like us. So if you're a white coach, if you're a Sean McVay, then you're probably going to, you know, the guys that you are friendly with or whatever and that you're going to take along with you are white coaches. I think you just have to expand your idea of what a head coach is, because right now it seems like they're all, the owners who are looking for coaches are married to the idea that, well, you can coach a quarterback, so therefore you can be a head coach. And while obviously a quarterback is very important to the success or not success of an NFL team, he's not the only person on the team.
That's true.
So why, you know, it's just, you know, people are getting too wedded. And I also question, too, there are a lot of black coaches, position coaches who are running back coaches, or black coaches who are receivers coaches, and there it doesn't sound like they're getting those opportunities to take on a bigger role that puts them in that position. And I would say, going back to the beginning of your question, Eric Bieniemy probably is getting knocked because he didn't call plays.
Right.
A lot of people are looking at it saying, well, yeah, you're the offensive coordinator, but Andy Reid is calling the plays. So what are you actually doing? And that's probably a black mark on him.
Wow. You're probably right. Now, I've got to go to break. I want to keep you on for the next segment because I want to get your take on the playoffs, especially this New England Chargers game, because I'm of the maybe the uninformed opinion. I think the Chargers can win up there, but we'll see. But I want to get your take on, and as well as the rest of the playoffs as well. So you're listening to 96.1 FM and 900 AM WRD, Black Talk Media. The Chris Murray Report will be right back.
Hi, this is John.
Hi, this is Juanita, owners of JD's Auto Body and Painting. We're located at 6300 Wayne Avenue, right there at the intersection of Wayne and Washington Lane.
We really like to thank all you word listeners for the support that you've given our business, and we really hope to see you in the future.
JD, tell them about our products and services we have.
We have a new state-of-the-art paint shop along with our body shop and detail shop. We can help you with the dents and scratches from the winter season.
Come to JD's Auto Body and Painting. Come on out and check us out. We're still honoring that word 10% discount. Give us a call, 215-848-5949. Again, 215-848-5949.
Thanks again for supporting our business. We really appreciate you.
See you at JD's Auto Body and Painting.
1 in 3 adults in America have pre-diabetes, but most don't know it. To let people know it can be reversed before it becomes type 2 diabetes, professional basketball player Julius Randle is doing everything in reverse.
I'm only dunking with reverse windmills. I drove the whole way to practice in reverse. I don't recommend it. This move's called the reverse shuffle. I do recommend it. And it took me months to learn how to speak in reverse, like this. Here's 10 almost for diabetes type 2 with living Ben has mom my. In other words, my mom has been living with type 2 diabetes for almost 10 years. So together, we want to say to the 84 million Americans at risk, exercise and healthy eating can help reverse prediabetes. Start by taking a simple one-minute risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
Bet he can't say that in reverse.
You're listening to Word Radio, 96.1 FM and 900 AM WURD, independent black media.
See, if I let this thing play a little bit longer, I'd be in here, man, just sitting back and just chilling, man, because that's Coltrane, ladies and gentlemen. He's John Coltrane. I am not. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
We're on the line still with us is Shalice Young from Yahoo Shutdown Corner, And Shalice, you for a long time covered Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots, and for both the Providence Journal and the Boston Globe. Everybody around the world is saying, as I'm watching, I saw the Pittsburgh game a couple of weeks ago. Oh, this is a sign that the Patriots might be in decline. Are they?
This certainly is not the best team that they fielded in recent years. I think offensively is the biggest question, which seems crazy to say because obviously they have Tom Brady and everybody's sort of been pooping and hollering about, oh, Tom Brady and Father Time is finally catching up to him. And if you look statistically, his numbers aren't much different than they were last year in terms of his completion percentage, his yards, his touchdown to interception ratio. He's pretty much the same guy that he was last year. I think, you know, Rob Gronkowski not being able to stay healthy for extended periods of time plays a big role. Julian Edelman, you know, tore his ACL last year and was coming back off that. I think it took him a little while to find his groove. Josh Gordon was, for the first time that I can remember, you know, as you said, the Patriots would try to bring in veteran receivers, and it would never work out, especially when they brought them in midseason, because the way that the offense works and it's read-based and, you know, the receivers just kind of have to react and they have to really pick up a lot in a very short amount of time. So I was glad to see that Josh Gordon was able to pick that up, and now we all know what's happened with Josh Gordon, unfortunately, and not being available to them. So I think they certainly do look vulnerable. For whatever reason, I think more the Anthony Lynn factor, I would really like to see the Chargers win. I know I'm supposed to be impartial. but, you know, I would like to see the Chargers win. You know, let's let Anthony Lynn have, let's see him have success. And even Phillip Rivers to an extent.
Right.
Phillip Rivers has been in the league for a long time.
Right.
Played at a really high level. Let's see them go. And I know a lot of other national media members, my colleague Frank Schwab that I work with at Yahoo, he's rooting for anybody to beat the Patriots, whether it's this week or next week. Because he just doesn't want to go to Atlanta and have to deal with Bill Belichick for a week. And I really can't say I blame him, having done it every day for 10 years. So, I think the Patriots, they have question marks, especially if Melvin Gordon is healthy. And I think he was taken off the injury report, if memory serves.
Right.
So if Melvin Gordon is healthy, the Patriots run defense in particular has not been great this year. So if they can get something going with Melvin Gordon, and maybe take some shots in terms of, Williams and get the passing game going that way. Mm-hmm. But if Melvin Gordon can do well, I think it really tips things in San Diego's favor, because the one thing that teams never, ever do, and I saw it 100 times or however many games it was, you give Tom Brady too much time.
Right.
If they can win the time of possession battle with Melvin Gordon, I would put things in the Chargers' favor.
Okay. Yeah, I would definitely do that as well. Looking at the playoffs as a whole, do you get a sense that there's no dominant team? You know, usually you come into the playoffs, you see a team, and you can say, these guys are going to at least be in the conference championship game. I don't get that from Kansas City with all their offense and the success of Patrick Mahomes. I don't get that, and I don't see it in the NFC, although the Saints have one of the most prolific offenses and are favored to beat our guys here in Philadelphia. I just get this sense that any one of these games can turn out, and it could go either way. And I haven't quite seen it like this in quite some time, because you knew a few years ago the Patriots were the best team in the AFC, and you knew whoever was coming out of the NFC was going to be okay. But how do you assess this field? Can anything happen? Is this as wide open as you ever seen it?
Oh, I agree with you completely. You know, you can look at all four games this weekend and easily see any of the eight teams winning those games. You know, I think maybe the longest shot is the Colts today.
Uh-huh.
I think, but I can even see a situation where the Colts win.
Right.
You know, I really do. I think if there is, and I apologize because I know I'm talking to Philly people, and I live with a Philly fan. My husband's an Eagles fan. But I do think if I was ranking them, I would say the Saints are probably the favorite. But again, you really can see a scenario in which the Saints go down. If not this week, then next week. You know, it really is. And I actually kind of like it. You know, I like the parody. I like the idea that when we go to bed tonight, we might be surprised at one of the two results. Or when we go to bed tomorrow, we might be surprised at the results. And, oh, man, we're going to see, you know, the Colts and the Chargers in the AFC Championship game. And that might not be what the networks want to see. But, you know, you might see fresh blood, so to speak, playing next week. And it won't be, you of course must tip your cap to the run of success that the Patriots have had.
No
but
doubt.
It would be nice to see other teams, you know, in the championship. It'd be nice to see, you know, a Chargers advancing to the AFC Championship game and maybe going to Atlanta and things like that. It makes, you know, this is what I remember when I was younger growing up. I mean, this is what the league was constructed to be, right? That any year
anybody can win it.
Almost any team, you know, it's not supposed to be that one team has, I think it's, oh my gosh, 7 or 8 straight AFC Championship games that the Patriots have been in. So again, you tip your cap to them. It's just incredible what they've been able to do. And you know, when Tom Brady finally does retire, the list of teammates that he will have played with will just be pages and pages and pages long, and that he was able to win with.
Right.
But, you know, to go into divisional weekend and say, yep, there are 4 games this weekend and any of those 8 teams could advance, it's fun. You know, it's exciting.
Right. Shalice, as always, we are out of time, but thank you so much. And I've always admired your work, and you keep doing your thing. And I say you coach track too, but
I do.
And so you're an amazing person in this field. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. We are out of time here in the city of brotherly love, but we will see you next week. The Chris Murray Report is done. We'll see you right next week at the same Chris Murray time, same Chris Murray channel, 11 o'clock, 11 to 1. All right. Holla at y'all. Keep on learning.
We are progressive and proud and interactive. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube at OnWord. This is Word Radio, 96.1 FM and 900 AM WURD Philadelphia. Streaming live at wordradio.com.
You don't know my. Knowing your breasts can save your life. Go to knowyourgirls.org for the facts you need on breast health. Brought to you by Susan G. Komen and the Ad Council.
At Dietz & Watson, we've spent over 75 years focusing on the details. This can be traced back to our founder, Gottlieb Dietz, who learned how to make Franks and sausages the right way in Germany. Today, each one of our delicious offerings is meticulously crafted using perfected details. Because if it isn't good enough for our family, it isn't good enough for yours. To us, the details make all the difference.
Lifting every voice
till earth and heaven ring.
This is Word Radio, 96.1 FM and 900 AM WURD Philadelphia.
Black Talk Media.
The views and opinions expressed by the guests, listeners, and hosts of any program on Word Radio do not necessarily reflect those of ownership, management, or advertisers of this station.
Radio.
And joining us now for our weekly vital signs segment, he's been on here before, Dr. Oscar Allen, actually. I think I pronounced it Aline, but it's actually, I think it's Allen, if I'm correct, doctor. And all right, there you go, Dr. Oscar Allen. He's with the National Association of County and City Health Officials, otherwise known as NACHO, NACCHO.org. Go to NACHO.org for more information. Dr. Allen joins us by phone. Doctor, how are you doing? Thanks for coming back.
It's such a pleasure to be with you. Hope the holidays are going well, and definitely looking forward to being on your show again.
Excellent. Yeah, always good to have you on. And happy holidays to you as well. So some people do realize that World AIDS Day was observed the other day. It was December 1st. There's still a number of observances and also a lot of conversation and continued research around HIV AIDS and the impact of it and how many people it afflicts globally, nationally, even locally in a major city like Philadelphia. So talk about World AIDS Day. What's different about the conversation now, this recent World AIDS Day observance? What's different about it now from what it was, say, 10, 20, 30 years ago when the HIV AIDS epidemic first struck?
I would say we've made several advances. So from the time the beginning of the HIV epidemic in the 80s, of course, and the way that was treated in society and even within science, to what we have now, where HIV